This audio interview with Don Kibler was recorded on 24th February 2018 in Cowra by Nikkei Australia's Mayu Kanamori and Masako Fukui. This interview was recorded for the Cowra Voices geolocative storytelling app, created in 2019 and launched to coincide with the 75th anniversary of the Cowra breakout. For more information, please refer to the overview in this archive.
Well, my name is Don Kibler. I have a distinguished member of the Order of Australia and the Order of the Rising Sun, and I'm the chairman of the Japanese Garden Foundation. I was chairman of the total project for a period of 30 years. I also am chairman of the Chad Order Sanketan Hokkai, and also the Nagakura Foundation in Japan. And I've been involved with Japanese relationship for now about 45 years, probably longer than anyone else living in Cowra today. When I was about 29, 30 years old, I was chairman of the Cowra Tourism Corporation, and I stayed as chairman of that for 25 years. And I had an idea to, you know, do something about a history with Japan. And I had a friend who was a tourist officer, and he's a very nice fellow, and he came up with several ideas. One was to recreate the camp, another one to build a tower, a gun tower, which we have now, of course. But in those, back in those years, 42 years ago, 1970, about 1970, he could only think about the war side for tourism. And we were sitting down together one day, and we tried to see what the people of Cowra thought about the idea of the So we were sitting down together talking one day, and I looked across at the river park here in Cowra, and I turned around to this young man and I said, "Peter," I said, we can't do the things you want to do, but we could build a Japanese garden." And that's where it started. And I put the idea up to the community on a meeting in January 1972. So what's that? That's 45 years ago. So from there, I thought, well, now what do we do? And there was quite a few people in Cowra that objected to it, but most people said, okay, you know. But of course, there you're sitting and how are you going to build it? We'd never seen a Japanese garden, any of us didn't have a clue. We hadn't met many Japanese even then. My first encounter with Japanese was way back in 1964. When a friend of mine in Japan, Father Tony Glynn, he said, "I'd like to come and have a service at the cemetery." And I said to him, "Well, why don't we have an ecumenical service?" So that was the first time that we had a Buddhists and Shinto and Christians all together. That was back in 64, but Tony Glynn brought the people out from Japan. But getting back to the garden itself, well, anyhow, the big job in front of us, how are we going to do this? And I spoke to the ambassador at the time. You call him Okawara Taisho in Japan. That's Mr. Okawara, Taisho Okawara. And I still get a Christmas card from him even now. And he's 95, 96. Anyhow, he thought it was difficult, but it'd be wonderful. So how do you go about it, and how do you get the local people to accept the idea? That was the hard part. So show me what a Japanese garden is. So I found a lady in Sydney, a Mrs. Shibioka, and she came to Cowra, and we asked her to make a model of a Japanese garden, any model, just to show people what a Japanese garden was all about. But I got her to make it in fit in the back of an old station wagon I had with a perspex top over it, so that we could take it around and show it to everybody. So that went ahead, and people could see the model and thought, well, this is a good idea. Hanshaw had to go a bit further, and I owned a hotel here in Carra at the time. I bought it about a year before. I thought it was a good investment. The only problem is the fellow that was leasing it off me, or renting it, he went broke at about 1974, a couple of years after I thought about the garden. And I said to the other fellows on the corporation board, I said, look, I've got to go and run a hotel of all things. I said, he can't pay the rent and he hasn't paid his license fees. So I became a publican, and I stayed on the board, but I didn't get heavily involved. And there was quite a few other people that came on the board too. Graham Drew was a very good help, Gordon Austin, John Bailey. John Bailey was an accountant. He was very, very helpful. Ab Oliver, who was on and off mayor here, he came on the board for a few years then at that 1975 or 76, I think it was. So in the meantime, while I was still there as chairman, I asked the New South Wales government to do a feasibility study. Is this possible and can we finance it? And they came back with an answer that if you can get 50,000 people a year and you don't have to borrow money, then you can survive financially. So that sounded pretty good. And on top of that, they said, if you get other money, we'll give you another 50,000. So they made a promise of the first $50,000. And then the federal government made a promise of $50,000. And then we thought, we've got to get a good architect. And Okawara was said, you know, you've got to have a real top architect do it well. Anyhow, he found three different ones, and we chose Ken Nakajima. Nakajima Ken's son, who, quite a little story I could tell you. In 2000, I went to Japan. I was finalising some things over there for the garden. And when I got to the airport, I thought, I'll ring Ken and see if he's home and I'll visit him while I'm here. I rang up and they said he died about 5 minutes ago. So I stayed for his service in Japan. So anyhow, we had a promise of 50,000 from New South Wales government, promise of 50,000 from the federal government. And Okawara-san, Okawara-taisho, as you say, in Japan, he was a wonderful man. He said to me one day, and you know, as Japanese go sometimes, very difficult, but worth doing. So anyhow, he contacted the Japanese Chamber of Commerce and Industry. At the time, Shigeo Nagano was the chairman of the Japanese Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And they came over here for what we call the Australia-Japan Business Cooperation Committee meeting, usually in October each year, and it's a bilateral exchange. So at that meeting in October of whichever year, I can't remember exactly, but it would have been about 1976 or 77, he gathered 125,000 from the members. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but we're talking about, you know, 40 years ago, it was a lot of money. So we had about 250,000. So where do we go next? And then wrote some letters to some different bodies around. And in the meantime, I've got to remember now exactly, but I think, yes, I can. We borrowed $90,000 from the council. $50,000 we had to pay interest on, and $40,000 we didn't have to pay interest on. So that let us get started, enough money to get started. Ken Nakajima came out here and we let him have a look at all the different areas where you could build the garden, and he fell in love with the site where the garden is now. And he said, yes, I can design a garden for this site. And he was very taken by the two big rocks on top of the hill, Yogoseki and Kosei Seki. Seki, yeah. One meaning the spiritual rock, and I forget what the meaning is. I haven't got my notes with me, but I think Japanese would understand the two very important rocks.
Can you tell me those, you know, that was the site, was
it was just, there was nothing there except for the rocks and the trees and the fields. Do you know if it had any indigenous significance?
What?
Indigenous significance.
Say that again?
Indigenous, Aboriginal.
Oh, no, there was nothing to do. We had the whole site inspected. Nothing there. Nothing in the whole site, the rocks or trees or anything. It was all inspected prior to the commencing work. So if you've heard anything different, it is wrong.
I'm digging, that's all.
I just wondered why you asked the question.
Because I'm digging, but I haven't heard anything else. Yeah, I've heard about Bellevue Hill. I just wanted to know.
No, we had archaeologists come here and Aboriginal people and go right over the whole site up there. So there's nothing.
No, that's good. That's good. We want to be able to see that.
Okay. Yes, well, you can do.
Yeah, thank you. You're a businessman and you're telling me about all these finances and you're getting money from all sorts of places. Do you think that in itself is kind of like a peace awareness raising activity by you going to all these different places asking for money to raising money? Is that an awareness raising activity as far as reconciliation and peace is concerned?
No, it was just something I wanted to do. I'd never done it before, or never asked people for money. But I've never asked for money. You see, that's the point. I have never asked for money, ever. Still haven't. I've said, this is what we want to do. Would you be interested in helping us? When the garden was finished, Ken Nakajima said to me, come and sit down, Don, and I will tell you the story behind this garden from the Japanese viewpoint. He said, you already know that the Buddhists, when they die, they go back to Japan or go back to their hometown. And every Japanese is a Buddhist. I said, yes, I know that. Well, he said, there are all those Japanese buried in the cemetery. They're not in our hometown. I said, no. But he said, now I'll tell you about the garden. He said, this garden is designed after the first Japanese landscape garden in Japan that the first Tokugawa built in Edo, because he'd captured the families of the daimyos, of the warlords, and to keep everybody happy, his secretary said to him, his secretary's name was Kohara, he said, well, what we should do is ask all the daimyos to come here to visit their relatives. And when they come, they draw pictures of where they've come from. Because, he said, you remember that you've got to think, at that time, they didn't have a geographical map of Japan because it was all the daimyos controlling little areas everywhere. And I said, yes, that's true. But go on, Ken, keep telling me. Well, he said, he built the garden based on the pictures of where they came from. And that is the first Japanese landscape garden. And he said, this garden is designed the same way. If you stand up what he called Kibler's Lookout, which is a rocks near the education centre, you can see the whole garden. And if you look at it, you can see the mountains, you can see the waterfalls in the mountains, you can see the ponds in the mountains, and the Tokono Chair, which we call a tea house, and then the river coming down to the ocean at the bottom, and then the hedges are trimmed to represent rolling hills. So he said, I knew you'd tell this story correctly one day, but but I should have never told it to any other Australians here. But now we Japanese believe because we've built the garden that way, that is the home of the spirits of the people that are buried in the cemetery. So that is the reason. It's not what a cow is doing, because we didn't understand it. But when you think about it, that's a good reason to have the garden the way it is. And it meant a lot to the people that are families that are, of the families that are buried out at the cemetery. So that really was, I guess, the catalyst for the peace precinct. Well, it certainly was. But it certainly made a difference to me. And one story that I could tell you about is four Japanese people came to see me one day in 1981. And at that time I'd sold my hotel and I owned the shops across the road and I was running the news agency. And taxi driver had brought them down to me and he said, I'm not sure what they want because they didn't speak any English, but they pulled out the book called Die Like the Carp that Harry Gordon wrote and showed me a picture of someone hanging, Kojima. His name was Kojima. And I worked it out that it was their brother. And they had never knew what happened to him. So,
okay?
I said, well, we'd like to find his grave. And I said, well, okay, I'll take you up the cemetery. So I took them up the cemetery and I said, pulled out a little box of plastic box. I found his grave all right, and it was a different name, but we worked out it was his. So his name wasn't Kojima, it was another name, but the grave was marked Kojima. So obviously that's where his bones were. Now, they pulled out this little box and said, can we bury this box there? Can you get permission for us? And I said, I'm not going to ask anybody. So I went back to my car and I had a shovel in the back. And I said, here's the shovel here. But it said, tell me what's in it. And I said, well, it took me a while to work this out because of difficulty with the language. Since then, I've learned a bit of Japanese, but not enough. Anyhow, they opened it out and said, this some hair off his fiancée that's still alive in Hiroshima. And she cut some hair off and said, if you find his grave, please bury it. So we did. We buried it. I wasn't going to ask permission. Once you start asking government for permission, you've got all sorts of problems. All the little bureaucrats got reason why you can't do it. So you don't ask them, you just do it. Anyhow, I thought I've got to do something. So on the way back, I bought a small crabapple tree and we planted it. I asked them to plant it in his memory in the garden. And if you walk out the back door of the shop at the garden, and you go to the left, well, about 10 metres up on your right-hand side, that little tree is now about 30 foot high. Beautiful tree. So that's one story. So these, and that's back in 1981, but I've found out a lot of other stories since then.
Would you excuse me if I listen?
I can't
please
hear.
Please listen.
You can listen, yeah.
Because I know
they're recording while I'm telling them. That's one story. But another story, so all stories have developed since that establishing the garden to make it central to the creation of the Peace Precinct. One of the other stories, which is another very emotional story, the Japanese embassy asked me one day that they said, we've got a problem. I said, well, what's the problem? There was a Australian that died in Queensland, a soldier. But before he died, he went to his doctor and he had a box with the bones of a Japanese soldier that he'd kept all those years under his house. And he said he felt very, the doctor told me he felt very bad about him, he wanted to bury him and do something. So the doctor got in touch with the Japanese embassy, and the embassy said that they went to the council. The council didn't want to have anything to do with it. So they came to me to see, and I said, yeah, sure, I'll do something, I'll find out. So I wrote to the Prime Minister about it, John Howard at the time. I think it was John Howard, yeah. He must have only just got in, though, about then. This all happened in 1999. And so he got in touch with me through somebody else, some secretary, wrote me a letter and said, Mr. Kibler, the Prime Minister, has given instructions to his department and the Department of Veteran Affairs. So I was trying to think, what is it? It's just virtually said that Mr. Kibler has authority to do whatever he wants to do. So I said to the ambassador, I think you better assure me that it is Japanese. So we sent the bones to the Griffith University in Brisbane, and they done forensic tests on it. And they said, yes, definitely Japanese. And then I said, well, we better try and find out where the guy came from. So we followed through with the Australian Defence Forces to find out where the soldier that had the bones, where did he serve? And he served in Borneo towards the end of the war, you know, Sandakan and in that area. So then I went back to the Corsair Show in Japan and said, this man, Bones, he came from Borneo, what regiment? So they weren't really able to help me there. So we left it at that. So then I got in touch with the Veterans Affairs, the Australian War Graves Commission, and I said, we want permission to bury the bones here in Cowra. They said, well, when do you want to do it, and what do you want us to do? So I asked them if they'd send they have a special unit, the Army, Navy and Air Force, the six each from, and they fire guns. So they sent them all up here when we buried him up there. And that's a story in itself. It'd have been crazy to bury them there if you weren't sure that it was Japanese soldiers. You had to make sure that it wasn't Japanese anyhow. So you got all those things. There's lots of stories like that.
Excuse me, I didn't quite understand. Where did you bury them in the end?
In the cemetery.
That's the third or the fourth row on the left-hand side from the front. Well, there's a thing that says
itself. Yep.
Okay.
You know where it is?
Yeah, I know exactly where it is. Yeah. It says unknown Japanese man from Borneo.
You couldn't establish it. From Borneo, that's right. That's how I found out it was Borneo. Because the guy, the Australian soldier, that's where he served in Borneo. So that's where he would have got the bones from. You're 99% sure. You can't be 100, but he might have. I know he might have got him in New Guinea, but he wasn't in New Guinea, so he was in Borneo. Anyhow, that's the story about that. But if you, and then another one, some Japanese, there was a report in one of the Yomuri, the Japanese newspaper, about what I was doing, building in a garden. And I had a letter from a man, and he sent some money, which I didn't need, and I actually sent it back to him. It was to help look after the cemetery, because his daughter, when she was about 5 years old, they were in a camp here, and she died, and she's buried out there, his daughter. The stories like that go on and on and on and on. So as a result of that, well, the garden was completed in 1986. And Ken Takura, whom you know, he said, well, I had an idea, Don, about pulling the cherry tree avenues from the cemetery to the garden. I said, yeah, that'd be a good idea. He said, how about giving us a hand to raise the money? I said, gee, Ken, I said, look, I spent the last 3 years or 4 years of my life doing nothing but raising money for the garden and building, and I said, never been paid anything, nothing. Not sometimes not even expenses. And I said, I would have spent $100,000 of my own money. And he said, it'd be worth doing. I said, look, I'll go to Japan once. And I said, you'd set up a few meetings and that. And so I went to Japan and raised in about 3 weeks. I stayed there. I raised $300,000. Since then, there's been another $700,000, so it's about $1 million. So there's each tree was 100,000 yen, right? Which equates now to about $800, but at times it was, you know, 1,200 or 1,400, it was all over the place. But around about $1,000. So the council project, because it was the council road, planned to be a bicentenary project in 1988, so I didn't want to do any more. I raised $1 million and that's enough. And I said, well, you know, I've done enough, I think. I've got to start earning some money for myself as well. I've got a family. So that's how the Cherry Tree Avenue came about. So and from there then, when I was raising the money for the Cherry Tree Avenue, a fellow by the name of Saburo Nagakura, he was then the chairman of Kyushu Electric Power Company, and with that goes the chairmanship of JR Kyushu and plus a few other things. And him and I became very good friends over a period of time, and he was a remarkable man, a real... if you hadn't met a samurai or a daimyo, I should say, he was a daimyo. He was that kind of person, very impressive. And he said to me, I'd like to do something in Kara, what would you like to do? And I said, well, there's one thing I'd like to do. I said, in the Cherry Tree Avenue, I'd like to build a park. He said, all right, well, he said, I'll put in, and at the time it was $100,000. And then I done some research with Japanese lawyers, and if someone personally donates money, the taxman takes half of it. But if he gives it to a foundation, there's no tax. So I set up what we call the Nagakura Foundation, Saburo Nagakura Foundation. The 100,000 went into there, and then the Kyushu Electric Power Company put in another 500,000, and we built the park that's up in the hill there. And I supervised the construction of that, as well as I supervised the construction of all the garden, the Japanese garden. So then that's another story. And of course, the peace precinct idea was a natural phenomenon coming from all those things, you know. And I can't remember half the stories.
It's obvious that you have personally contributed enormously to peace, huge amount. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Were there personal costs to that?
What?
Were there personal costs? I mean,
personal costs.
Costs. I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about your contribution. You know, tell us about it in a personal way.
Well, I'll put it this way. At times, I think I shouldn't have done it.
Which shouldn't you?
I shouldn't have built the garden or done any of those things because I never got paid for any of them. No, nothing. Not $1. Not $1. And I put in, someone calculated, because I've kept a diary of all the hours and things, something like 30,000 hours of working. Mind you, I'd done this in the prime of my life, not when I was old and retired and somebody else done it. I've physically done it, those two hands and that head. The cost of that, you can't calculate it, money.
And then what is the reward then?
There isn't any, only the satisfaction when you look back. But I had to put up with a lot of flack from people in Cowra, some people. I remember one fellow who was a soldier in Australian guy who was in New Guinea, and he came into the news agency one day and he abused me for building it, And the...
What's that? Why did he abuse you for...
Well, he fought against the Japanese and he hated them. That's what he said. You shouldn't do anything with the Japanese. You're talking a long time ago, That's all changing now, but that, by completing it, that gave me... I get satisfaction from that point of view. In this case, that fellow, he came back to me after the garden was finished and shook hands with me and apologised. That's the satisfaction. And now, nobody says anything bad. People don't say anything bad about it.
So why don't you hate the Japanese? Why don't you hate the Japanese?
I don't hate anybody.
When was the first time you met a Japanese person? Or knew anything about Japanese?
1964. I told you when I first started here, when Father Glenn came out to the cemetery. I must admit, when I was at school, we had a dartboard with a picture of the emperor on it, and he'd throw darts. But that was then. I don't hate any race. I never have. I don't think about it that way. They're just people. The stories I've told you and I've told to other people, they're the people. It tells you, like the ladies that come out with the hair from the piece of the hair off the fiancés to bury the piece of hair in the cemetery with her fiancé. How could you hate anyone like that? Of course you've got bad people in every race. You're never going to stop that. You put 1,000 people together and 10 of them are going to be bad, no matter where you go or what you do, Australia included. There might be more, but at least that.
So when you grew up in Cowra, right?
Hmm?
You grew up in Cowra.
Yeah.
So were you aware of the Cowra, the camp, the prisoner of war camp?
I used to go out to the camp and watch the Japanese playing baseball. You could see them through the fence.
So what did you think then? What did you think of the Japanese then?
I don't know what I thought. I just thought they were people, I guess. I don't know. I was too... I was only 10 years old when they broke out. A bit hard to remember. But I can remember the breakout, I can remember in the morning I looked up. We didn't live very far away from the camp, and you could hear the machine gun, and you could see the lights, the searchlights going across until somebody shot them out. But in the morning I remember clearly seeing a small yellow aeroplane flying around, a little tiger moth or something, old-fashioned, no looking for prisoners to escape. And you could see them, they'd picking them up everywhere, and one come past in a truck with a heap of Japanese on, taking them back again. So they found one fellow hiding in a culvert underneath the culvert near the where you drive over the gutter. He crawled in under there and found one hiding there. I mean, our fellas tried to escape too, that's the way. There's people. But it's a good story. But it's never been told properly because nobody knows it like I do. They haven't had the experience. No way. You know, I've been to Japan, what, 93 times, I think, in 42 years, 44 years. Yeah.
Was that no, alone?
There'd have been no garden without you. Uh-huh. You've had a lot of battles.
Yeah. And took a lot of black and white.
But it's worth it, huh?
Hmm?
Is it worth it? Worth the battles?
Mm.
Beautiful garden.
Oh, I hope so.
What do you think?
It probably is. It's done a huge amount for the town. I mean, most people wouldn't bother to pull up in a car here unless if the garden wasn't here. The cemetery, you can't promote it. You can't say, hey, stop, come and have a look at the cemetery. There's nothing there, it's just a... So it's brought in millions of dollars into Cowra over the years, millions. Now, you got enough now?
Thank you.
I'll tell you something else I've done. I've registered only last week the Australian Peace Museum here. There isn't a peace museum in Australia. So I've got a few people on side, so five phone calls and that. Get it together. Yeah. It's registered now.
Okay. That'll do. Thank you.